Well, this evening, William and Hannah are going to be baptized. Why are they going to be baptized? Why do they have to stand here and look at all your faces and tell their story and then go through the waters? Why do something like that? Well, simply put, they have come to faith in Jesus Christ. And that changes everything. Do you remember the reading? Jesus' words. He says, "Daughter, your faith has made you well." What is faith? Now, there is the faith. That's the teaching of the Bible. But that's not what Jesus is talking about. He says, "Your faith has made you well." What is faith? Is it believing something you know isn't true? But if you believe it hard enough, it might come true. Is that faith? Or is it religious magic? You know, Jesus is like a big battery, and if this woman can sort of plug herself into his power, and hey presto, she just needs the right sort of plug, the right sort of faith. Is that what faith is? What is faith? What have William and Hannah now got that they didn't have before? Well, what we're going to do in this short time, we're going to divide our time into two. And in the first part, we're going to simply look at Mark's narrative, what he tells us. So if you have Mark's gospel, you may like to turn to the reading which we had. If you don't want to do that, just listen as we go through. But Mark chapter 5 and verses 24 to 34, page 14 in the little gospel. Let's look at what Mark has to say. Well, verse 24, we're told, "And a great crowd followed Jesus and thronged about him." So can you see the scene? There's this great sea of people surging, ebbing, flowing. And at the center, Jesus himself. But Mark's focus is not on the many, but on an unnamed woman. Verse 25, "And there was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and who had suffered much under many physicians, and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. 'I will be made well.'" Now, Mark's portrait of this woman is very sympathetic. We're told that she has a discharge of blood. It's a woman's problem. And if you know anything about first century Jewish society, a discharge of blood would make her unclean. And if anyone touched her, they too would be made unclean, and they'd have to go through a long purification ritual. So not only is she sick and getting worse, she's a religious and social outcast. This is taboo. Her condition is shameful, and she feels it. She's ashamed. And not only that, as Mark puts it, she suffered much under many physicians. Now, as you'd imagine, medicine was primitive, even brutal. The world was full of quacks and cures. Apparently, in the Middle Ages, when it came to surgery, farmers were much in demand. Presumably, if you're good with animals, you're good with people. But can you imagine it? You're lying there waiting for some surgery, and standing over you is a big, smiling Farmer Giles. And they would cure anything, they'd deal with anything, apparently, from toothache to cataract surgery. So who knows what this poor woman has been through, what she's suffered, and she's had to pay for the privilege. And she's not getting any better, and now the money's run out. Things can't get much worse. And there was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years and who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better but rather grew worse. So she's sick and suffering, she's unclean and untouchable, she's penniless and alone. And she's getting worse with no hope of recovery. Now think about it, 12 long years. It's attritional, isn't it? She's being worn down. But she has a plan. Call it desperate, call it daring, but it's a make or break plan. She's heard of Jesus, Jesus the healer. But how to approach him? It can't be face to face. She dare not. She's ashamed. She's unclean. That's what dominates everything. And he can't touch her, because if he does, that will make him unclean. But what if? What if I can creep up behind him? Concealed in the jostling of the crowd. And what if, concealed, I could just stretch out my hand and touch his clothes? Just a fingertip. Just a touch. Maybe I'd be healed. And no one would need ever know I was there. For she said, if I touch even his garments, I will be made well. It's a sort of touch, isn't it? And go. And no one will be any the wiser. And Jesus need never know. What if? So she puts her bold plan into action. So can you see? There's this great throng, isn't it? This great scrum of people all around Jesus. But if you just freeze the frame and look there in the corner, there's a hand reaching out. Can you see it? There's a sea of bodies, but there's a hand that's just popped through the middle of them to touch Jesus' clothes. And then when you look at the next frame, it's gone. Did it work? She just touched a fingertip, touched his clothes. What's the effect? Well, look at verse 29. And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Wonderful, isn't it? 12 long years, and yet she's healed in an instant. Her weary, broken body, it lives again. It's like a resurrection. And if she can feel it, Jesus too can feel it. Because her gain is his loss. Her healing has been at his expense. Verse 30, and Jesus, perceiving in himself the power had gone out from him, immediately turned around in the crowd and said, who touched my garments? The healing power that has gone into her has come out of him. And he feels it. So, who touched my clothes? Verse 31, and his disciples said to him, you see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, who touched me? Lord, this is bonkers. You're being jostled by the crowd. Everyone's reaching out their hands. Everyone's touching you. The real question is, who hasn't touched you? And you say, who touched me? You want us to single out one among the many? But verse 32, Jesus is looking around to see who it is. And of course, our woman is beetling off into the crowd. Her identity shielded. She can't be seen. But when she hears Jesus' voice, who touched me? There's something in that voice. It's irresistible. And now it's her turn to stop. Verse 33, but the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. She's been discovered. And she's frightened. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him. But it's more than fear that I've been found out. The actual word in the Greek says much more. Because having been healed, the sense of fear is that she's in awe. She's in awe of the healer. And she's not just falling down at the feet of a man. She's conscious that she's in the presence of God himself. Of course, because the Bible tells us, we see the godness of God in the face of Jesus. Knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. She goes public. It was me. So what would Jesus do? Scold her? Rebuke her? Threaten her? Is he going to shout at her? Humiliate her? You know what the law says. You are an unclean woman. How dare you steal up behind me and touch me? What does he say? Verse 34. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. Isn't that wonderful? Can you hear the tenderness in his voice? Can you see the light and the warmth in his eyes? She dared to approach the King of Kings, the King to end all kings, only to find that the touching point was his gentleness. Here is the King of Love, who loves her and reassures her. In fact, it was the safest thing in the world for her to come to him. He says, you've done nothing wrong. You believed I could help. You trusted me to help. And your trust was not misplaced. Your faith has made you well. And it's more than physical healing. That word, go in peace. Peace, the one thing she hasn't had for 12 long, hard years. And Jesus has given her life back to her. In fact, it's more than that, isn't it? Because the healing is instant and total, it's as though he's given her a new life. And she's restored to the community. Because no longer is she unclean. And if those relationships have been put right, supremely it's the vertical relationship that's been put right. See what Jesus calls her? He doesn't say woman. He says daughter. She's now related to the King. No longer unknown, she's openly identified with the King. Daughter. Do you see the healing is total? It's a life restored, a life reborn, and it's Jesus who's done it all. She came to him empty-handed, with nothing to give to him, with nothing to recommend her. She came just as she was, but looking, looking, looking to Jesus. And he has made her well. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. So part two. What then is faith? Well, faith is a starting point. Faith is seeing my need. And of course, this woman is overwhelmed with a sense of her need. She's sick, penniless, she's been let down countless times, and things are only getting worse. And to cap it all, it is the nature of her illness, isn't it? She's unclean, this flow of blood. Hence all this cloak and dagger stuff. She doesn't want to be found out. She doesn't want to be seen. She's so ashamed and she's so isolated, isn't she? Ashamed, unclean. And yet for all that, her sense of need drives her to Jesus. So faith begins with seeing my need. Because if I don't see my need, I will never go to Jesus. This day there are lots of hands touching Jesus. But one hand was different. Because one hand touched out of a sense of overwhelming need. Faith is seeing my need of Jesus. Have you seen yours? The Bible says that, like this woman, that the dominant thing about me is that I'm unclean. And really, there are no surprises there, are there? Like this woman, there are times when we all want to hide in the crowd. Yeah, we all do it. That sense, if you knew the real me, you wouldn't want to know. Things of which we're ashamed. We go through life sometimes as it were waiting to be found out. Things I don't want you to see. Things I don't want God to see. Which is maybe why I try to buy them off with religion. Or maybe I ignore God altogether and just hope he goes away. You know, as I was going up the stairs, I met a man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. I wish that man would go away. I wish God would go away. Like this, when we're all unclean. And I need to see that. I need to own up to that. I need to see my need. Now, last Sunday, I was sitting at the lunch table and I was troughing away. You know what it's like? Oh, lots of lovely food in front of you and you stuff your face. Wonderful. Well, a little while later, I said, oof. I said, my trousers are too tight. But somebody pointed out that my trousers weren't to blame. I was. Nothing had happened to my trousers. They hadn't shrunk. They hadn't suddenly got too tight. Actually, I'd just eaten too much. So why did I shift the blame? Why did I say it was my trousers' fault rather than my fault? But we all do it, don't we? We all shift the blame. None of us like owning up. So we get angry. Why? Well, there is such a thing as righteous anger. We're justified in our anger, but most of our anger isn't justified, is it? But I get angry. Why? Well, you say, well, they let me down. Well, I've had such a stressful day. Well, why did I get angry? Well, because, like my father, I too have a temper. And what we do, we shift the blame. My trousers are too tight. Why can't we just say, I was angry because I'm so self-absorbed, so self-obsessed, so self-centered. Actually, it's all about me, me first. And I'm actually so self-centered that I want the universe to revolve around me. And when the universe doesn't revolve around me, I get angry. Especially when others get in the way. Why can't I just say that? Why can't I just own up to that? But what we do is we shift the blame. We feel unclean. We're waiting to be found out. And therefore, we don't want to own up. I don't want to be found out. But unless I own up, unless I see my need, that actually in the Bible's words, I am unclean. I'm an unclean sinner. That I'm going to eternity via the judgment. A judgment for which I'm unprepared. And on that day, there's no way I can prove my innocence. And the Bible says the wages of sin is death, eternal punishment in that other place. Unless I see my need, unless I front up, then I won't see my need of Jesus, the only one who can help me. And I know it's taboo to talk like this, isn't it? It is taboo. We don't talk like this. We don't want to talk like this. I have a flow of blood. It's unclean. Don't talk about it. And we hide from it. But faith begins, William and Hannah will tell you, when we begin to see our need and we begin to front up and we begin to be honest with ourselves and honest with God. But it doesn't stop there. Our woman, she sees her need. She thinks, what if? She believes that Jesus can make her well. That's where faith begins, but it doesn't stop there, does it? Because what does she do? She actually goes to Jesus to be healed. She trusts him to heal her. Now, in that sense, this woman knew all about faith. How many doctors had she trusted? She put herself in their hands. She'd persisted with the treatment, only to find that they were not worthy of her trust. But Jesus is different. is not just that he has the power to heal, it's that he's so willing to heal. And she didn't need all this cloak and dagger stuff. Actually, she could have walked straight up to him and found no one more welcoming, more gentle, more embracing, more human, more loving than Jesus himself. He's not what she expected. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. And you see, when we see our sin, when I see my uncleanness, that my life is about me and me first, and it's not about God, and it's not about my neighbor, it's about me. And we feel we have to hide it, and most of all hide it from Christ, and therefore it's taboo, I need to keep away. And somehow I need to prove that I'm not that person. But actually, if you look at Jesus, he's the very one I can trust myself to. And instead of waiting to be found out, he's the very one I can come to just as I am, with all my sin and uncleanness. And he is the safe one to go to. He's not what we expect. No matter what I've done, how far from God I am, how many times I've rejected him, how many times I say, well, I don't believe any of this stuff. It's not true. I don't believe it. I don't want to know. I can come to Jesus just as I am and find that he welcomes me with open arms, because that is just the Jesus that he is. The Jesus here is the Jesus today. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He has not changed. He's the one person I am safe with, the one person I can tell everything to, one person I don't have to hide from. Because he's the Jesus who loves and saves and heals the very worst of us. Do you doubt it? Then look at his cross. One of the hymns we sang tonight. A man there is, a real man, who once on Calvary died. His blood for guilty sinners ran from hands and feet and side. This wondrous man, of whom we tell, is true Almighty God. He bought our souls from death and hell, the price, his own heart's blood. Jesus healed this woman at cost to himself, and he did so willingly. And on that cross, Jesus died the punishing death for sin that I deserve to die, at infinite cost to himself. But he did so willingly, so that I, an unclean sinner, can be made clean. So that I can enjoy the calm of sins forgiven. So that I can know eternal life, life which begins now. So that he can say to me, son, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Maybe the one thing you haven't known for a long, long time. Peace. So faith is seeing my need of Jesus, but not stopping there. It's then going to him, trusting myself to him to make me well. And that's what's happened to William and to Hannah. As unclean sinners, they could have hidden away, couldn't they? They could have pretended, well, that's not me. But they haven't. I know it's taboo, because it's things of which we're ashamed, but they've owned up to it. And they said, well, that is me. That is what I'm like. I am a sinner. I am unclean. But they've come to Jesus just as they are. They didn't try and put things right. They didn't start getting religious. They simply came to him just as they are, and he saved them. And just as this woman was called back to be publicly identified with Jesus, so they're going to be baptized to show that Jesus has washed them clean, clean from the inside out. And actually he's raised them to a new life. And now they belong to him for time and for eternity. Faith. If you're not sure about that word, just put the word trust. That's what it means, trust. And it's so simple, isn't it? I don't have to prove anything. I don't have to sign a contract called religion and start doing religious things. Who wants to do that? It's simply coming as a sinner to Jesus. Coming just as I am. And trusting that he's willing and he's able to make me well. And if faith is simple, it's also safe. It doesn't depend on me. I can't heal myself. Depends on him, and he's so willing, so ready. He already knows everything about me. I can't hide from him. He stretches out his hands. He says, whoever comes to me, I will never cast out. Isn't that wonderful? Whoever you are, you can come. You're welcome. And if faith is so simple and so safe, faith is also transforming. It changes everything, because when I come to Jesus, I come to know him. Jesus says to this woman, daughter. It's lovely, isn't it? We don't know her name. She's just a woman, but he's known to her. Daughter. She's now a child of God. And when I come to Jesus, I enter into a relationship with God. I become his child. That outstretched hand, the language is universal, isn't it? We all understand the outstretched hand. It's a cry for help. But the outstretched hand also speaks of a relationship, doesn't it? Because someone can take that hand and hold that hand. It speaks of a relationship. You can think of a little child with their father. And what do? They just stretch up their hands, don't they? That's faith. It's the outstretched hand. What's the child saying? The child is saying, my daddy's so strong. My daddy loves me so much. I'm safe in my daddy's arms, and my daddy will never, ever let me go. Well, faith is the outstretched hands to God, and God sweeps me up, son, daughter, and he puts me on his shoulder. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Well, perhaps you're looking at your faith. As you're looking at your hand and you're thinking, do I have enough faith? Do I have the right sort of faith? Am I really sorry for my sin? Do I understand everything? Well, look at this woman. Does this woman have it all sorted out before she comes to Jesus? Did she have the right sort of faith? Actually, if you look at it, it's a little bit superstitious, isn't it? You know, just touching the hem of his garment. But the point is this, she saw her desperate need. And her need trumped everything else. It silenced all the doubts that she might have. And however she went about it, the bottom line was she trusted Jesus to do for her what she couldn't do for herself. And if he didn't fail her, in all the, with her faith, whether it's superstition or quite what it was, he will not fail you. Just come to him. Maybe you think, well, okay, but what do I pray? What do I say to him? What if I don't pray the right prayer? What if I don't know what to say? Well, a Native American Indian was saved praying 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Because the only prayers he'd heard were in English. And they were the only English words that he knew. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So he prayed. And God saved him. Because God could see his heart. A heart that was reaching out. A heart that was open. A heart that came to Jesus. Weary, worn, sad, longing for peace. The one thing he hadn't had. And maybe it was just a fingertip on the garment. But it was enough, you see. He wasn't looking at his hand saying, is my hand enough? He was looking to Jesus to save him. And saved he was. Because Jesus is willing and able. It's a lovely old English word, to the uttermost. Jesus saves to the uttermost. This woman had a plan. What if? What if? Don't go through life waiting to be found out. Have you ever thought, what if? What if I come to Jesus? What if I come to Jesus tonight? And we know it's taboo, isn't it? All this stuff about sin and judgment and the other place. But what if? What have you got to lose? What if? Why don't you come to Christ? You see, like this woman, we can't pick and choose, can we? The need is urgent. Time is short. What if? Why don't I come? So come to Jesus. In the busyness of tonight, there's lots of people here, isn't it? It's quite a crowded room. In the busyness of tonight, why don't you steal up behind Jesus? And in the quietness of your heart, stretch out your hand. Lord, I've heard what you've had to say, so I haven't got peace. Save me. Forgive me. Heal me. What if? Because he's passing through this way tonight, and he's willing to save all who come to him, including you.